Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 17th of June. Recording at, what have we got here? 10:06 p.m. That's British Summer Time. Later than usual because of an exhilarating day, second exhilarating day at the Chart Seminar, where it's always a privilege to get to speak on one of my favorite subjects and a great treat to meet so many subscribers. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various different asset classes. But first, a few highlights. And stock markets remain generally steady. Government bonds, a little bit firmer in here today, but not much on the upside. And these uptrends in government bond futures have certainly deteriorated. As a matter of fact, they've more than deteriorated. They've all been broken in the last week and a bit. And this is really interesting here. According to a Bloomberg news headline that just flashed by, the U.S. dollar saw its biggest down day since August in here today. And I had certainly already said in the comment of the day copy that it was its biggest downward dynamic for several months. Well, I didn't realize that it dated all the way back to August. That's important. And it's been another banner day here in precious metals. Gold following up yesterday's big gains with another more modest but $2 gain. But again, it's extending that move overall, and all the industrial metals were strong as well, and soybeans romped again, leading an upward move in the grain and bean complex. Now, let's get back to the big picture long-term outlook here. First, global stock markets. The big question, as far as I'm concerned, well, yeah, one of the big questions here is, are we in a long-term period of mean reversion for the US stock market? And by that I mean, following the bursting of the bubble in 2000, are we going to see another one of those generational long processes where the where we get multiple contraction and we also see rising yields, not in any sort of linear fashion, but in rolling waves? So, in other words, each sell-off for the US stock market will produce lower price-earnings ratios and higher yields than the previous sell-off. And equally, each rally phase for the US stock market will top out with somewhat lower multiples and higher yields than we had seen in the previous rally phase. Now, I believe that's very much the case, and history's on my side, but it's not a popular view because most people like to see bull markets in perpetuity. But I'll back history on this instance, and I haven't seen anything really from the technical evidence to suggest otherwise. If Wall Street is in a secular bear trend, again defined as a generational long process of contracting P/E ratios and rising yields, then when Wall Street is under pressure, that will certainly create a very stiff headwind for other stock markets around the globe. However, other stock markets are not necessarily in secular bear markets. Asian stock markets, in my view, are most definitely not in secular bear trends because they had theirs earlier on. Japan had 13.4 years of a secular bear market following the bursting of its bubble in 1990. The smaller Asian markets all collapsed following the or during the Asian crisis of 1997. And they got walloped again, of course, when we had the US stock market bubble burst. And therefore, in terms of Asian stock markets, we've already seen PE ratio contraction to a considerable degree and rising yields. And these are really quite attractive markets, I think, at this stage. But they will always be subject to the influence of that Wall Street market. But my view is that when Wall Street is steady, let alone rising, and that's certainly been the case recently, then we will see the Asian stock markets doing pretty well generally. My favorite, as you know, for the very long term remains India. It's a bit pricey in here today, not overvalued, just it's had a good run on the upside. I think I regard it as fairly valued, and I'm also a bit cautious because I think Wall Street is vulnerable at this stage. First 2 years of a new presidential cycle are usually the worst in terms of performance for the stock market, with the second year worse than the first. We're in the first year, obviously, of a new U.S. presidential cycle. Also, the Fed hasn't completed its phase of raising interest rates, and I expect further rate cuts than most analysts, I beg your pardon, further rate hikes in the U.S. than most analysts have been forecasting recently. I also think that analysts are perhaps a little bit optimistic about the either speed and or extent to which the ECB or the Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee are likely to lower interest rates. We may have to wait a bit longer. That wouldn't surprise me in the least. European stock markets have been extremely strong after the March to mid-April sell-off, with just about all of them pushing up into new high ground. They look mighty overextended to me, but we saw some small downward dynamics, some small key day reversals. I think I posted a chart of DAX back on Wednesday, but it didn't get any follow through on the downside. It pushed back up and actually nudged a new high in here today before coming off a bit. So I regard those keys as just a warning shot across the bows. I do think the trends look a bit overextended. Thus, I did roll forward my hedge short positions in those those European stock markets, and also my June NASDAQ short positions. I'll have the full listing on the website of the prices and details of those. I didn't quite have quite enough time to add those into the site today, but I have mentioned, of course, in the last few audios that I would be rolling those short positions forward into September contracts. I'm also long Nikkei stock index futures, but my longs in the stock market are very heavily weighted, extremely dominant weighting in two areas: Asian stock markets and also the resources stocks. Okay. And I'm likely, very likely to stay with that waiting for quite some time. I think the only thing that would really tempt me to come out of it anytime soon would be if we had some dramatic technical changes in the resources sector. They're going gangbusters at the moment. Or if the stocks that I like got extremely overextended, stocks and funds that I like. Now, that isn't going to happen unless Wall Street's a lot stronger than I think it's going to be. Okay, looking at the government bond markets here, I mentioned in the highlights that all of the uptrends for bond futures have been broken recently. I continue to see endless rationalizations, people explaining why Greenspan's conundrum is not a conundrum and ignoring Greenspan's various warnings. I really disagree with all of those comments, maintain that government bonds are an accident waiting to happen, and that accident may have actually started in here right now. I'm also interested to see that most analysts continue to rake over the burnt carcass of deflation. The only true deflation that we're seeing right now is in manufacturing. And that's because of globalization, fearsome competition in that sector. We're seeing inflation just about everywhere else. We're seeing asset inflation, and if you pay the household bills, as I've said so many times, you'll know plenty about inflation in terms of those costs for basic supplies and also services. Now, I think that again, inflation is going to remain. Well, it'll be a situation, I think, of where we will see gradually rising inflation over the next few years. It's like all long-term secular trends, it tends to start relatively slowly, and it's insidious for a good many years, but gradually picks up momentum. And I do expect the asset inflation that we have seen to eventually spill over into consumer price inflation, and then it will spill over into wage inflation. That's a sequence that I look for. And it's quite a bit different from the inflationary cycle that we saw in the 1970s. That's when consumer price inflation led the way, and then we got the asset inflation and then the wage inflation. Wage inflation usually comes last. So I'm happy to remain short to government bond markets, but I've stressed all along that one's going to need to be patient in here because people will be fearing deflation far more than they fear inflation for quite a few years yet. And you might remember that during the last disinflationary cycle, when Paul Volcker, years after Paul Volcker had aggressively commenced wringing inflation out of the system, creating that long multi-year trend of gradual disinflation, that investors and politicians were still worried about the next rise in inflationary pressures. Okay, moving on swiftly here. The US dollar. It's usually a case of the US dollar against the rest more than anything else. The US dollar bottomed in late December against a crescendo of bearishness expressed by the crowd and accelerating downward trends. It got down close to that US dollar index level of 80, which was most definitely a psychological support level, not least because it was a round number, but especially because it was the region of the historic lows, down in that sort of 80 to 78 area. It didn't quite touch 80 before it bounced. That was a predictable move. You may remember comments along those lines at the time. And I have been mentioning really since the 31st of May, as this was moving back up. No, I mentioned this last week, correction. And I mentioned last week, I think on Wednesday, that, or Tuesday, no, it was Tuesday. Let me get it straight. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit tired. It's been a long day for me, but I'll get this right. It was Tuesday of this week that I mentioned in comment of the day that the US dollar index was closing in on the 90 level, again, around a phobia area and also an area of lateral resistance. I think it was at 89.31 when I posted the chart on Tuesday, an area of potential resistance. Well, a couple of days ago, we saw the dollar index back away from that 89.31 and a bit level, and today we saw a downward dynamic, and that looks to me like quite an important short-term move. I certainly think it's capped the dollar's rally for at least the short term. So I opened a couple of dollar short positions, and I was tempted, as I mentioned in the comment of the day, to buy the euro because I think there are more Forex traders have probably shorted the euro than anything else. And so therefore it probably will get the better bounce initially. But I don't like the euro, and as it's an experimental currency overall, and I think people are going to be worried about the euro and the eurozone for quite some time. So I passed on that one and went back to a couple of old favorites and picked up the Aussie dollar and the New Zealand dollar. My position in the New Zealand dollar that I opened today is about twice the size of the one in the Australian dollar. That wasn't so much a technical call, but I do like the positive interest rate differentials, and I went for the bigger return in the New Zealand dollar. But I'm probably going to hold those just for a short-term trade. I'm not looking for a big move, but this is the third time that I've played this in, say, in the last couple of months. So it's been a nice little earner overall. And what else can I mention here? Big, well, what I would expect overall. Let me just finish. I haven't finished on the dollar in terms of that big picture. I think there's a good technical case to be made to say that the US dollar is overall in a bottoming out process, but these currency tops and bottoms tend to form over years rather than a few months, more often than not. It doesn't have to happen this time around, but I suspect it actually will. I suspect there will be enough factors for people to worry about regarding the US dollar, but from supply to the much commented on current account deficit to cause the dollar to range really for quite some time. So I still maintain the view that we will see the dollar eventually trend back down to that 80 level on the dollar index and probably go a little bit lower overall, but I've never been in the dollar collapse school, as you know. But I'm now saying that the dollar's rally is probably over. It's certainly over in the short term, in my view. But you know my rule of thumb on dynamics. This is not a hedge in saying this, but I'll back the dynamic as I have here today in buying the Australian and New Zealand dollars against the US currency. I'll back the dynamic until or unless it is countermanded by a dynamic in the opposite direction. I do not expect to see the dollar go surging up next week. Now, precious metals have been very strong while the dollar has been rallying recently. One of them's taken a bit of a breather in the last few days, and that is silver. But silver had made the early running, so that's hardly surprising. If gold remains firm, and I suspect it will, if platinum remains firm, and I suspect it will, then we will get another little surge in the silver market, quite possibly next week. I do have a big long position in silver. I've also got, let's see, in terms of size of position, a small to medium-sized position in gold and also in platinum. And gold continues to rally up from the lower side of its range. And platinum, I think this really is quite exciting. In here, we saw that breakout yesterday, or new closing high for quite some time, since well into 2004, when the actual peak had occurred. And it was important to me that we had follow-through in here today because on previous moves upwards, platinum, as you know, if you've been listening to these broadcasts, would get back up towards the 890 level and flop right back down almost immediately. So after yesterday's good gains, I think it was up about $11, we saw a further $6.6 here today, closing the July position, closing at 898.1. It was up as high as 905, but that's a good move. That's good follow-through, and there is a small backwardation of $4 or $5 in the platinum market. So I'm happy to own those two. I've got to stop in on the gold market. I'll certainly raise that on Monday, and I'll put in an in the money stop on my platinum position on Monday as well. That's my intention at any rate. And what else can I mention here? The industrial metals are all firm, all up again in here today. So the supply inelasticity theme is still very much alive and well. Also, oil. How many bearish forecasts have you heard on oil? I received a report that I noticed in my emails. Morgan Stanley economist, it was Andy Z, actually talking about a collapse in the oil price. Well, maybe he'll be right in the sense that any of you is in with a chance, but I see rather the opposite. Maybe if there's any point in Andy Z's favor, and we've got oil testing its highs in here today, closed the spot price closed up $1.89 at 58.47. And that or if there's any point in NDC's favor in here in the short term, it is that oil is still trading at a contango, a small contango of about a dollar. So we do not have a shortage in oil. If we had a backwardation with a spot price, in other words, selling at a premium to the to the futures contracts, then I would be more bullish in the short term. But this has been a predictable rally, a predicted rally, and I don't see any evidence that it's over. I'm aware that with oil testing its highs, there is a possibility that we could see it encounter some resistance following the good rally that we've seen in recent weeks. But it would take a clear downward dynamic to make me think, right, the resistance from the former high is going to hold, and we're going to see oil range lower and a further extension of its overall trading range. I remain adamant that oil is in a secular bull market overall. But that bull market, we're still in the early stages of that secular bull market when we will see a considerable amount of ranging. And I think energy generally, whether we're talking about oil, whether we're talking about coal, whether we're talking about uranium, to me, this is the best of the supply inelasticity stories. And the reason for that is that energy is the most important industrial raw material by far. Our society can't function, modern society cannot function without these sources of energy, which are largely fossil fuels at this stage of human evolution. So we can't exist without them. And the demand is rising remorselessly as these developing countries become more wealthy and individuals and middle classes develop and people have aspirations for the cars and the refrigerators and the air conditioners and all the gizmos and gadgets that use energy. To me, the bull case for this sector is really very compelling. And there's a scary side where the replacement of these fossil fuels consumed is much, much more difficult to achieve. World isn't running out of oil, but we are very close, if we haven't already reached or passed the point where annually our consumption will begin exceeding the rate at which new reserves are actually found. So global production in crude oil, in other words, may reach a peak before too much longer. And the more certain prediction is that that the demand for crude oil will continue its growth, which carried on right through the stock market crash in 2000 and right through the whole 9/11 recession period. and has been increasing again in the last couple of years. So it continued to rise, say, throughout that entire period. It's continued to rise for a good many years consecutively now, and that rate of increase in the demand for oil has accelerated a bit in the last 2 years. And also, of course, once energy is consumed, once that barrel of oil or that coal is consumed, it's gone in terms of any other effective use. Now, I'm also a big bull of the industrial metals, where most of which remain in backwardations. The two exceptions here are aluminium and zinc currently, but the others are all in backwardations, and the backwardations have been the norm for the last several years, indicating shortages. So the industrial metals are a key supply inelasticity story, but the metals exist pretty well in perpetuity. In other words, they get recycled. And therefore, the energy story is even more exciting than the industrial metal story. I also like the precious metals because demand is rising there, both industrial demand, jewelry demand. There isn't that much of the stuff about. And the really big story that lies ahead is the remonetization of these metals in the eyes of investors. That's a long-term process that has only just begun. And I think it's really quite an important stage in the development of this bull market cycle that we have seen this week. Gold move to new highs for the last many years against euros, yen, and Swiss francs. So it's not just a dollar story. Actually, it hasn't been just a dollar story since 2001 and 2002. The price of gold had been appreciating against all those currencies, but it had been ranging, I think, against the euro for it might have been as much as 18 months. You can see that chart, of course, in the subscribers library, but it had been ranging for a very long time, and therefore it was fashionable for people to say, oh, dismiss gold as just being a US dollar story. Well, it clearly isn't. And I feel that gold's new highs against the yen, the Swiss franc, and the euro have ushered in the second stage of a gold bull market in terms of psychological perceptions, where a good many more people in Europe and Asia will be aware of the fact that gold is appreciating against other currencies than just the US dollar. And of course, it's appreciating against the Chinese renminbi, which is pegged to the US dollar. I do expect to see the dollar price of gold move back up and probably through the highs that we had seen last year and earlier this year, but not by a huge margin. And the time to buy these industrial resources and precious metals is after they have seen a setback within their overall upward trends. And the time to be getting out is when they're extending moves into new high ground and attracting a lot of, or attracting more speculative interest and attention. The reason for that is because in these early stages of the bull market cycle, and I maintain that gold today is where the Standard & Poor's 500 index was in the mid-1980s, the chart action will be, price action will be characterized far more by ranging than trending. In other words, we get months and months of sideways ranging, which is very boring. Anybody who has long positions becomes disillusioned, certainly if they bought at the previous high. And then the we get these see long-ranging consolidations, and then gold takes another small step on the upside. That's the type of pattern we've been seeing, and I think that that type of pattern will continue for quite some time yet. Okay, and last but not least, we've got a flurry of activity in the grains and bean complex, which the sector has been dirt cheap for quite some time, and there's just enough in the form of weather scares here to keep speculative interest in these markets percolating. The soybeans have by far the best technical pattern, and that's why I'm long November soybeans. I do have some corn, some remaining corn, about half of my original corn position. That's had another good day, getting up near the highs of the recent trend. Once again, my corn position, I think, expires. I'm certain it expires next week. I might well let that go, but because I do prefer the soybeans pattern overall. And so that's it, folks. And just left for me to, or remains for me to say, have an absolutely splendid weekend. I'm looking forward to a bit of a rest.